Hello, guys, and welcome back to another episode of Listen to Less. Today is our last episode in both season two and within this 4-week little mini series within season two about hormones pertaining to weight gain or weight loss resistance. So, today we are going to talk about estrogen, and I did bring on a new friend. Her name is Alex Long. She is a registered dietitian, and we both love this stuff. We love functional nutrition. So today we're just both going to talk at you and hope that you listen to us. Hi, Alex. How are you?
Hello. I'm so excited to be on this show. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, I'm very excited. So let's just dive right into it and talk about estrogen. I'm sure this is the hormone that everybody's been waiting to hear because we did this little mini series. We talked about thyroid, we talked about insulin, we talked about cortisol. I'm sure cortisol was a hot topic too. But when people say hormones, I don't think their mind goes insulin. I don't think their mind goes thyroid. Their mind probably goes cortisol, estrogen, testosterone, progesterone. And those are probably the extent of hormones that the general public jump to. So I'm sure that the ladies listening are excited for this episode.
I'm super excited for this episode. I love teaching people, especially women, about sex hormones and how their sex hormones play a role in their health. And you probably run into this too, but I find that so many women don't actually understand how their sex hormones play a role in not only their body composition, but just their overall well-being. So this is super exciting.
Yes, that's one of I find it really difficult to convey that online because so many women, they think hormones, pregnancy, and that's like the only two things. They don't realize like, oh, I need to be ovulating to feel my best. I need my hormones to be in a good place so I can actually feel good, have good skin, have good bowel movements, lose weight, like not be puffy, not have horrible periods. There's so many different reasons you would want to have optimal hormone levels aside from just trying to get pregnant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's dive in.
Okay. Do you want to start us off by telling the listeners? I'm trying to come up with a name to call them, and all I can think of is calling them the Lesters.
The Lesters. Wait, that's cute.
I haven't even said that on the podcast yet, but I don't know why, but I want to call them the Lesters. So if you like it, let me know. If you hate it, DM me and say, do not call me a Lester. But
Actually,
for
maybe
today,
not. I feel like that kind of sounds bad if you really think about it. Maybe we don't use that name.
okay, well, today we're going to go with it. So tell the Lesters, what is estrogen?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So estrogen is actually a group of sex hormones. There are three different types of estrogen circulating throughout the female body. We have estradiol, which is probably the type of estrogen that most women think of when we think of estrogen. Like the primary female sex hormone is estradiol. But we also have estrone and estriol, and they each serve somewhat different purposes in the body. But for the sake of this podcast, if we are referring to estrogen, we're probably talking about estradiol, since again, that is the primary female sex hormone. It is made in a woman's ovaries, and that's going to be the hormone that rises during our follicular phase. So that's going to be the phase that begins after menstruation. Estrogen slowly rises to initiate LH secretion. LH is another hormone that stimulates ovulation, i.e., the release of an egg from our ovary. So that is kind of like the spark notes of what estrogen is, why it's important in the body.
Yes. And so, in relation to what today's topic is, because if you're coming to listen to this to hear specifically about like your menstrual cycle or just how to track your cycle and all of that, I have several episodes that you can go listen to hear just specifically just about that. But today we're going to talk about estrogen and how it pertains to fat gain or difficulty losing body fat. So, estrogen doesn't directly cause weight gain. It's not like, oh, I have high estrogen, therefore my body puts on extra body weight, or therefore I can't lose weight because I have high estrogen. However, it does influence several different factors within the body or other, it's kind of like a domino effect where other things start to go into play that then can lead to an influence on both body fat distribution. So where you start gaining weight, your metabolic rates, your metabolism, your thyroid. We remember 2 or 3 episodes back, we talked all about your thyroid. So that's going to come into play again today with estrogen. And so it's not estrogen equals fat gain, but more so what dominoes do these estrogen levels, whether they're high or low, trigger to fall, and then what dominoes are falling after that, that can lead to difficulty losing weight or cause you to gain weight without doing anything differently in your life.
Yes, absolutely. And I know you had mentioned that you had talked previously about cortisol and having a lot of weight in your abdomen. And you probably have seen online people either have like that quote unquote apple body shape or that pear body shape. And most of the time, people with that apple body shape, where we have a lot of excess belly fat stored in our abdomen, in our core, that can be a sign symptom of high cortisol or even insulin resistance. Whereas if you see a woman who is typically more pear-shaped, that can be a sign symptom of estrogen dominance, high estrogen. We know that estrogen is stored in our fat cells, but it really does have an impact in what you said, body fat distribution. It's not going to cause body fat gain itself, even if it is stored in the adipose tissue, but we can look at someone's body and say, oh, if they're having a lot of excess body fat, kind of they're gaining weight out of nowhere and it's tending to be stored like in that lower abdomen, hips, thighs area, we might want to look at estrogen as a potential contributing factor.
Yes, 100%. Do you want to dive into some of your notes here about, since you did mention cortisol, how that cortisol stress loop, what that looks like and how it pertains to estrogen?
Yeah, absolutely. So I really like to talk about the relationship between stress and our menstrual cycle and stress and our sex hormones, because as do you, something that I love to talk to my clients about is how everything has a root cause. We can't just look at somebody's lab work and can't even just look at somebody's body type and say, oh, they probably have high estrogen. We're always asking the question of why do they have high estrogen? Where is that really coming from? And so a lot of times I have women who are coming to me extremely, extremely chronically stressed. They might be under eating, over exercising, or they might just have an incredibly high stress lifestyle and they're not doing anything to help support their bodies through that, help support their parasympathetic nervous system. And so those women are probably going to have really high cortisol. And that elevation in stress, elevation in cortisol is actually going to impair ovulation. I've had women, once we start educating them on how to track their basal body temperature, how to track their cycle, we realize that they're not even ovulating regularly. Mm-hmm. And ovulation is like, that's the main event as a woman. Right. Like we have to ovulate, right? That's what we're made to do. And that lack of ovulation is going to cause relative estrogen dominance. We know that progesterone is only produced after ovulation. And so if we're not ovulating, we're not going to have any progesterone. Therefore, we're going to have way too much estrogen in the luteal phase. Mm-hmm. And all of that together is going to lead to a lot of inflammation in the body. It can even contribute to insulin resistance, which we also know is a big player in body fat gain. And that inflammation is also going to increase the activity of an enzyme called aromatase, which actually converts androgens, so testosterone, into other forms of estrogen, thus kind of increasing this estrogen dominance cascade and sort of mm-hmm. making the problem worse. And I know that can be a little bit of a difficult pathway for some people to follow, but it all circles back to the root cause being stress. So if we're not addressing your stress levels, if we're not supporting your nervous system, that again, ultimately is going to impact your estrogen, progesterone levels and contribute to more inflammation and weight gain.
Yes. And I want to kind of hone in and give a little tough love to listeners. I talked last week about this, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, in the stress topic, but I had a post go really viral on TikTok recently, And I was talking about PCOS and I was talking about stress being a root cause, and nobody liked that answer in the comments because they were saying, well, life is stressful. Like, what am I supposed to do about that? My job, you want me to quit my job? Are you telling me to quit my job and like make no money? It's like, okay, girlfriend, reel it back in. I can tell you're stressed by the attitude I'm getting from you.
Right.
But yes, life might be stressful. Like, life in and of itself is stressful, but it comes down and you may not be able to get things off of your plate. It's not always like, what can I get off of my plate? But how are you coping? Are you just grabbing your phone and disassociating and consuming more and more and more content that makes you compare, that makes you way too aware of all of the evils in the world, that makes you realize how you don't have as much money as somebody else that has this influencer lifestyle? Is that what you're doing when you're stressed? Are you going to alcohol when you're stressed? Are you going to something that actually is going to increase your cortisol and your estrogen more when you drink it? Are like, what are you doing when you are getting off of a shift that was really stressful? Because it's not always about getting things off your plate or quitting your job or finding a whole new life, but how are you coping with the stress that you have? And that's where it comes into those parasympathetic activities. And it doesn't have to be that you're Gandhi over here meditating for an hour before you go to bed in front of your red light with all the things, right? It can just be like, go do something that makes you laugh. I always ask clients, when's the last time you belly laughed so hard you like couldn't breathe? And most of the time they look at me and they like start thinking about their life. And then it usually is a very sad moment because they can't remember the last time that they had a good laugh of like pure joy. So find things that you can add to your life that give you laughter, that make you smile. Tap into what you like to do as a child. It doesn't have to cost money. It doesn't have to be like uprooting your entire life, but find small things that bring you happiness into your day-to-day life so that you can cope with the bigger stress of life in general.
Yes. Mic drop. I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because that is something that a lot of people in our field don't talk about. They don't talk about the importance of play, adding play and joy into our life, making time to be around people that lift you up, and how impactful that is for not only your stress levels, but your overall health.
Yep.
Right. And even I just had this conversation with one of my clients today, actually. She is that person with a really, really high stress job who travels all the time, who has a million things on her to-do list every single day, and not a lot of it is in her control.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. The answer is not necessarily just running away from it all, although I know sometimes we want to, right?
Yeah.
But it's, how can we support our bodies through that? How can we set boundaries and make time for those things that really do lift us up? How can we implement? I know it sounds crazy, but doing some deep breathing, just 1 or 2 minutes a day, really makes such a huge difference from a nervous system standpoint, from a cortisol standpoint. And it is absolutely going to help regulate your hormones. And it is often the difference maker that I see for clients who are struggling with high estrogen levels, with weight loss resistance, with poor digestion. Sometimes it really is just, hey, can I implement just a couple of minutes every day of this thing to show my body and myself a little extra love?
I told a client last week in check-ins, I wanted her to sit in her car on her lunch break in absolute silence for 5 to 10 minutes. And that was like all I wanted her to do for the whole week. It was just silence. Because she works long hours, a lot of like talking with her job. And I was like, your brain is going crazy. Your brain wants silence. So I want you to just, here's the thing with that is, if you're somebody that's always stressed, you're always in fight or flight, silence is going to feel really uncomfortable. And it's almost, it could even be anxiety inducing because your brain is so go, go, go all the time. Thoughts, 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 to do. How am I pleasing everybody around me? That when you're silent, you feel really uncomfortable because you've gotten so comfortable living in the stress. So it's like, what am I supposed to do right now? But you're supposed to do nothing. and you just need to sit in absolute silence. This is why I love if you go on a walk, don't listen to anything. Maybe bring your phone for safety, depending on where you live, but don't listen to anything but the birds outside, and just process through your thoughts and let your brain kind of like decompress from the day versus taking in another podcast or taking in content or music. Like, we're taking in info all day long. Sometimes all you like, sometimes nervous system regulation, all it is just a few minutes of silence.
100%. 100%. And I know we're kind of going off on a little bit of a tangent right now, but I do think that it's important and it does relate to estrogen and fat loss. One really quick thing that I also want to add, you had talked about how when it comes to stress management and parasympathetic support, it doesn't have to be, you know, we don't have to be Gandhi, we don't have to be meditating, we don't have to be doing the red light therapy and the cold plunging and all of the things. I also had a client who was so stressed about trying to do all of the things that it ultimately defeats the purpose. But I want to talk about cold plunging really quickly, because I myself just recently got into this and I've had to talk to clients about it who are interested in it as well. If you have access, or even just like a bathtub where you could put some cold water and maybe some ice, if you are interested in doing something like that for the purposes of nervous system regulation, the best part about something like a cold plunge isn't just the quote unquote good stressor that it's giving your body and your nervous system, but it's teaching you how to breathe. It's teaching you how to focus on your breath during a stressful situation. That's ultimately all a cold plunge is, because as soon as you learn how to turn your brain off, because you have to, you're plunging into ice cold water, and just focus on your breath and do some quick, deep breaths for even just 20 seconds, you're going to feel your body relax into it. You're going to feel your nervous system come out of fight or flight. And then all of a sudden, you're super calm in this bucket of ice cold water. It's not the ice cold water that is the solution. It's the breath work. It's you focusing on nothing else but calming your body down. And the more that we can implement even just the breath work, not only in the stressful situations, but even when we're just going about our everyday life, we start to associate that coping tool with being calm. Now, all of a sudden, we're going to have regular cortisol levels, more stable cortisol levels. Now, all of a sudden, we're going to ovulate regularly. Now, all of a sudden, we're not going to have all of these estrogen dominant symptoms that we're going to talk about, and we're not going to have issues of imbalanced sex hormones that are ultimately impairing our ability to see results. So you like how I just circled it all back together there?
Yeah, I do. Let's jump to thyroid now.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
I'm not very good at my transitions, so let's just jump to the next topic.
Screw a transition. We don't need it.
No. That was all great though. I loved all of that. So thyroid. If you didn't listen to the thyroid episode, I highly suggest you go listen to the thyroid episode, because a lot of you listening may really need to listen to the thyroid episode, and the thyroid could be something that is one of your main issues that's actually going, you're being told it's normal and at your doctor, but it's not normal. So estrogen can actually impact your thyroid hormones. And we know, if you listened to the episode, that your thyroid hormones, depending on the state of those, that is going to be kind of a make or break on if you can lose weight or not, depending on the state of your thyroid. There's something called hypothyroidism, that's essentially where your thyroid hormones are too low. You need to get them up to a better place, because you don't have adequate amounts that are going into the cells to give your cells energy so that your metabolism can be higher, quote unquote. And estrogen, when chronically elevated, can actually increase something called TBG, which then lowers your free T3 levels. So then your thyroid hormone, you don't have adequate levels. So then you can be in that hypothyroid state due to estrogen, or subclinical hypothyroid state due to estrogen. And then you have difficulty losing weight when you're trying, or you're doing absolutely nothing differently, but you just start gaining weight and you don't know why you're gaining weight. So that is something that estrogen can do. Do you want to touch on that any further?
Yeah, no, I think you said all of that so perfectly. But one thing I wanted to come back to in the beginning of this podcast, you had mentioned that estrogen, high estrogen itself, does not cause body fat gain. But once we tease out what the root cause of your high estrogen is, which we'll talk about other potential root causes in a second, I'm sure, in addition to, high cortisol, like we just went on a tangent about. But in this case scenario, if we have high estrogen for one reason or another, that is ultimately going to impact your thyroid hormone levels. T3 being the more biologically active thyroid hormone. And we know the thyroid is like the metabolic control center. So when we have low thyroid hormones, again, for one reason or another, that's going to slow our metabolism and contribute to weight gain, even if we don't change anything about our day-to-day life. We could be doing all the right things, eating enough, fueling our body with nutrient-dense foods. But if all of a sudden, for some reason, now we don't have enough T3 circulating around in our body, in our cells, resting metabolic rate is going to decrease. And now all of a sudden, we might actually be in a calorie surplus without even realizing it. And that's what's going to contribute to the body fat gain. So I just kind of wanted to clear that up.
Yes, it's not estrogen equals fat gain, but the thyroid is one of those dominoes that falls. And then, like you said, you're still exercising, but then all of a sudden, and you're eating a certain amount, but then all of a sudden, that amount is actually more than what you're burning off when it wasn't before due to some of these dominoes that have fallen. So, we've talked about high estrogen symptoms before, but since we're all on the topic of chronically elevated estrogen, I'll review some of these so that you can kind of see for yourself if this sounds like you. So, some of those symptoms of high estrogen would be weight gain around your hips and your waist, like we talked about earlier, having really heavy periods, or even periods that where your bleeding lasts a very prolonged, like 7 to 10 days, intense PMS, so having a lot of really heavy cramping, having headaches and migraines before you start to bleed or during your bleed can also be related to estrogen. Having a lot of fatigue just in general, having low sex drive, fibroids, if you're somebody that you have gone to your gynecologist and yeah, why am I blanking? Gynecologist, yes. I was like, did I say the wrong doctor? I didn't. Okay, if you go to your gyno and some of your symptoms indicate fibroids, and you've been diagnosed with fibroids, or having fibrocystic breast lumps, so fibrocystic tissue in your breast, having low mood, anxiety, especially in your luteal phase, headaches again, and digestive issues. This would look like bloating, constipation, nausea, especially around ovulation. If you're somebody that your ovulation is worse than your period, this could be a sign of too much estrogen causing a lot of digestive issues and even histamine issues around your ovulation. And then bloating and puffiness. So, which this can look like weight gain on the scale because bloating, puffiness, water retention is going to increase your weight, but it's not necessarily fat gain. But when you step on the scale, you're going to see a higher number or you're just going to feel bigger, but it's not necessarily fat gain, it's just water retention. So, those are a lot of the signs and symptoms of estrogen dominance. Do you want to add any to that?
Yes. And one thing worth noting is that women can have high estrogen levels without having low progesterone levels. So some women are still ovulating and they're producing progesterone in their luteal phase, but their estrogen levels are still high because a lot of the symptoms that you were mentioning are also symptoms of low progesterone. So it can be confusing. And this is why testing is really important sometimes, because going off of these symptoms alone, a woman might have headaches around her period, a lot of anxiety around the time of her period, a lot of fatigue. Like those symptoms itself can be symptoms of low progesterone and they can be symptoms of high estrogen. So what I just kind of wanted to point out is we have to think about what exactly is causing the symptoms and what exactly is causing the imbalance in estrogen. And that is going to tell us a lot about what the potential root cause is if that makes sense. Like, for example, if we see high estrogen symptoms and we see high estrogen in lab work, and we also see that a woman is not ovulating, that is probably going to point to a different root cause than if we saw this woman is ovulating, but she's still having the same symptoms and she still has high estrogen. They are going to be two different solutions, mm-hmm. if that makes yes. sense. So
yeah.
That being said, one of the most common root causes of high estrogen that I personally see is poor gut health. Mm-hmm. If we are not pooping regularly, then we are not detoxing excess waste in our body. We are not detoxing excess hormones. And estrogen, again, is a hormone, and we need to be cycling through our hormones on a regular basis. We need to be detoxing on a regular basis. And literally, the number one way our body detoxifies itself is through pooping and peeing. And so if you are constipated, you're probably going to have a buildup of excess estrogen in your body, leading to some of the symptoms that we just described. So that's number one, gut health, making sure you are regular. Mm-hmm. And another one that I see a lot of the time, and you had briefly mentioned this, is alcohol intake.
Yep.
And this is actually, I'm going to dive a little bit into the weeds for a second, but I wanted to bring this up because this is why I mentioned that estrogen is actually a group of sex hormones and that there are different types of estrogen. And again, can highlight why lab testing can be really, really important, because I actually had a client. She was a great client. She tracks her food consistently. She hits her macros. We are eating enough. We are strength training. We are moving her body in all of the right ways. She does go out to eat often, but we've taught her how to build balanced meals, making sure that she has protein and veggies and all of the things, seemingly doing all the things right. And we go into a fat loss phase. We go into a very moderate calorie deficit. And again, she's super consistent with everything, so I didn't think that there would be a problem. But turns out she's experiencing pretty severe weight loss resistance. No matter how much we try to push her calorie deficit, she is not losing weight or body fat at all. And in fact, her symptoms start getting worse when we try to go into the fat loss phase. Her PMS mm-hmm. symptoms start getting worse. She starts to get even more inflamed, more puffy. And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Big red flag. We got to pull out of this deficit. We got to do some lab work. Something is going on. And I did a workup on her, and I checked not only her estradiol levels, but also her estrone and estriol. And I saw that she actually had pretty normal levels of estradiol, again, the primary female sex hormone, but her estrone was really elevated. And estrone is going to be the most inflammatory form of estrogen. You know, the quote unquote bad guy, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I realized that she was actually drinking a decent amount of alcohol, not to the point of concern, not to the point where she was ever going over her macros. She was making her alcohol fit into her intake, but she was going out and drinking on a pretty regular basis. And to a degree, you should be able to fit in a little bit of alcohol here and there and still lose weight. But if you're already having issues with maybe gut health, or she lives a little bit of a stressful lifestyle, and again, everybody's metabolism, everybody's body is so different, the alcohol intake for her was just upregulating production of the hormone estrone, and that was contributing significantly to inflammation, blood sugar dysregulation, and ultimately leading to her weight loss resistance. So that's just kind of an example of how alcohol intake can really play a role here, and again, why it is so important to be working with somebody who understands the mm-hmm. interconnectedness of all of these hormones and yeah. what they mean and all of the things.
I want to add to that, because I think that it's something to know about the person that you do choose to work with. Mm-hmm. And of course, like your general macro coaches and personal trainers, they're great, but just know if you are somebody that you're going deep into a calorie deficit, you're working out a lot and nothing's happening, and you're starting to notice you're getting more puffy, you may even be putting on weight or inflammation, your periods do start to get worse, you start to get constipated, things like that start to happen. If that coach cannot then look deeper into what's going on, and their answer is to push you harder, I would just be careful with that, because this is a perfect case of if Alex's client was not working with Alex and was working with somebody that just did macros and like gym programs, they could potentially end up in a worse scenario. So just know that, pay attention to those signs, and that's when you may, it's a good time to pull out of a diet and focus on, okay, I need to find somebody to help me figure out why this weight loss resistance is going on. It's not always a case of pushing harder.
110%, 110%. And that's why biofeedback and monitoring biofeedback is just so important. So thank you for pointing that out. But
yeah.
Other causes or potential root causes of high estrogen are going to be, actually, this is kind of related to alcohol intake, but liver health and just overall detoxification function. You know, even aside from if you are someone who's pooping every day and you've never struggled with constipation, you might still have issues with methylation in your body or just detoxification in general because of, you know, poor liver health, maybe because of history of alcohol intake or because of nutrient deficiencies. So if you have a deficiency in B vitamins, choline, you're probably going to have issues with methylation if you're not intaking enough glutathione, or if you're so stressed that your body's using so many of these vitamins, minerals, antioxidants just to try and keep you afloat. Again, that's going to cause issues downstream. If you are somebody that's exposed to a lot of toxins, chemicals, endocrine disruptors, you know, BPA, PCBs, all of those kinds of things, I don't say this to scare you because I think a lot of people on social media nowadays try to really push hard in like, oh, toxin-free this, toxin-free that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to have all natural beauty products and like the completely non-toxic pans. And it's like, that's not realistic in today's society for most people. So like, don't get too in the weeds with that. But I've even had clients that have jobs that expose them to toxins like that on a regular basis. So that can absolutely be an endocrine disruptor for that person, thus leading to higher estrogen. And I just kind of wanted to mention that as well.
And too, because I added this to my notes to discuss, when you say poor gut health, in my case, I had estrogen dominance, but my progesterone was great. Like after I worked on that part, but when I did retesting, estrogen kept going up and up and up, but estrogen was going up, progesterone was great. I was not having any sort of constipation. In fact, I had the opposite issue where I was going way too much and it was never formed. And I actually had a lot of candida. And so candida, this goes back to both liver, because candida will impact your detox pathways a lot, and your gut health. So things like fungal overgrowth. So if you're somebody that gets yeast infections all of the time, that is a big sign that that could be, because candida and fungus is estrogenic. It does promote higher estrogen levels. And so that was something that I had to spend a very long time. And candida, I'm going to swear, is a bitch to get rid of. It is, candida likes to stick around. And it took a long time for me to get candida out of my system. I'm actually doing a 3-day stool test next week to just kind of see where I'm at right now. Most of my symptoms have gone away. I just have a few lingering and I just want to double check like where I'm at right now. But man, that can be something. And also mold. Mold is a fungus. So if you're somebody that you've lived in a house that has a lot of mold or water damage, or it just kind of has that fungal smell, that's something to actually be aware of as well. I'll use a client case to just give you an example of this. She came to one of my webinars about, I think it was just about like tracking ovulation. It was nothing specific to estrogen dominance. And she came to it, and in there I had talked about mold toxicity and estrogen dominance. And then she texted me afterwards and she was like, I was meant to come to that webinar because where I'm living currently, mold grows so fast and it's on the walls, and she's actively living in mold. And so I was like, well, that's a whole nother conversation. That's a pretty intense and extensive case. But that if that is like, that is a reality, a lot of places do have mold, water damage, especially in apartments. in those warmer climates. So that's something to pay attention to as well.
100%. I used to live in Florida and we had mold on our walls on a pretty regular basis, no matter how much we paid to have our apartment complex hire people to try and get rid of it. It kept coming back. So it is definitely a sneaky little MFer.
Yes.
But I also wanted to point out too, thank you for mentioning the Candida connection. If you have a history of hormonal birth control use, that in itself, coming off of hormonal birth control, can cause a rebound effect where your estrogen levels have been suppressed for so long. Now, all of a sudden, your body is just in overdrive and now we're producing too much. That's its own issue. But history of hormonal birth control can also increase your risk of chronic Candida infection. So,
Interesting.
something to think about. Yeah, me too, literally. You and I were
Yeah.
just talking about this.
Yep. I was on it for 9 years and I started getting yeast infections every 3 months the last year that I was on it. And then even when I got off, it was still for about another year after getting off, it was every 3 months on the dot I'd get a vaginal yeast infection, like full blown, to the point where I took Diflucan too much and now have an allergy to it. And so.
You and I are literally the same. Literally the same. I had to be on a 6-month intensive Diflucan regimen to the point where it stopped working for me. Like, I just straight up was so resistant to it. And lo and behold, years later, I'm off of birth control and I just recently did my GI map and still had Candida overgrowth, even despite all of those years taking an antifungal, which is just horrible for your liver, your immune
I
system.
know,
It's
so bad.
like, oh man, yeah.
Yeah. No,
Anyway.
now if I take it now, my lips swell up and they peel off. Like I have an actual like anaphylactic response to this
That's
medication now.
awful. That's
And
so
I'm like,
awful.
this is, and yet the doctors are still like, well, not still, because I haven't gone to a doctor for this in a long time, but towards the end, they were like, well, is it because you're wearing leggings? And I'm like,
What?
yes. Have you never heard a doctor tell you that
Oh, for
about
the yeast
yeast?
infections.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah, I have had
Their
doctors.
answer was always, well, you do work out, so that's probably why, because of your leggings. I'm like, you know nothing. You know
You do.
nothing.
What do you want me to do? Just work out without pants?
I know. I was like, should I just go like commando, no underwear at all?
Ever.
Goodness. Okay. Anyways.
Anyway.
Poor food quality. And
Well,
also
I figured that that was kind of a given again, especially if you do have a nutrient deficiency, which a nutrient deficiency might be from poor food quality. If you're eating a ton of inflammatory foods, right, that's going to increase your estrogen levels. If you're not eating enough leafy greens, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, you're probably going to have potentially a B vitamin deficiency, especially if you're chronically stressed. And again, we just talked about how that affects your methylation pathways and all of the things. So, food quality is always important, but assuming you are working with somebody who has helped you master the basics of how to build balanced meals, there are still these possibilities of, again, other li underlying issues, even thinking about intestinal permeability. I guess that comes back to gut health, but you don't necessarily have to have an infection or a candida infection to have poor intestinal permeability, which is ultimately going to lead to nutrient deficiencies and trouble with absorption. And that, again, can impact your sex hormone levels and all the
Absolutely.
things.
I think so. Personally, I don't think it's as common knowledge as we want to believe that poor food quality can lead to nutrient deficiencies. Just an example, one of my favorite like comedy podcasts that I was listening to just yesterday on the episode, one of the girls was talking about how she's like, I'm just confused why we're supposed to take so many supplements. And the supplements she was talking about were vitamin C, vitamin D, a B complex, magnesium. Like she was listing the basic ones, the ones that we often have people take, not any absurd supplements like a fat burner or anything like that. And she goes, I'm just confused how our ancestors lived if we in today's society have to take all of these just to be in good normal health and at a normal level. And so to that, I wanted to like talk to her through the podcast. But of course, there's a couple different conversations here of one, our soil's more depleted than it was before. So the nutrients you're getting from your fruits, your vegetables, your meats, all that, it has a lower level of nutrients than it did decades ago. So that's one argument. Argument number two is, if your diet is not a nutrient-dense diet, if you're eating, you're not eating enough protein, most women aren't. If you're not eating enough fiber, most women are not. If you're eating, going out to eat a lot, you're getting your fast food, or you're eating a lot of like your processed foods and not your whole food, high food quality diet, you can definitely eat enough calories but not have enough micronutrients from vitamins and minerals that make up our natural foods born from the earth versus those that are chemically made, like your, I don't know, whatever's in the middle aisles of the grocery store. I can't think of like a food off the top of my head. So you can eat enough food to meet your calories, but still be deficient in nutrients if the quality of that food is not high.
Yes, 100%. Thank you for shedding light on that. I like to think of supplements like that, especially things like a multivitamin or B vitamins, vitamin C, magnesium. It's just an insurance policy because it's not realistic for anybody, nor would we ever recommend somebody eat a 100% quote unquote clean, super nutrient dense diet, no treat foods, no processed foods whatsoever, all organic. Like, that is so unrealistic. And even if you were doing exactly that, you would likely still need to supplement with some of these other nutrients that you are simply not getting, because it's impossible to get that kind of wide variety again, especially when you tie in the fact that our soil is much more depleted now than it was, like you said, decades ago. So that's super important as well.
So I agree. I think a good multi, a good B complex, there's a few of these supplements that I think don't hurt anybody to, like you said, it's an insurance policy just to make sure that you are getting adequate amounts. So I think that there's always a few supplemental things like a multi or a B vitamin, things like that, that can be really, really helpful just in general health.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And now we've been talking a lot about high estrogen and high estrogen symptoms and how high estrogen can play a role in weight loss resistance, in body fat gain. But I don't want estrogen to get a bad rap. I want to talk about why it's so important to have healthy levels of estrogen. And I want to talk about why we want to be on the lookout for symptoms of low estrogen too, and what that looks like. So do you want to talk about that?
I sure do. So estrogen's kind of like a Goldilocks hormone. I feel like all of our hormones are Goldilocks hormones.
Right.
Hormones in general are like Goldilocks, but especially estrogen, where we don't want too much, but we don't want too little. We want it to be right there in the middle. And actually, it's a moving target, because between your, over the course of your monthly cycle, that optimal level is going to go up and come down where we want it to be, depending on what's happening in our cycle. But this is why a lot of women in their follicular phase feel really, really good. This is why you feel energetic. This is where you actually are more insulin sensitive. You will have a higher libido. You're going to be more active. This is where your skin is going to be glowing. I love my follicular phase because my skin looks so good. And then when I'm on my period, or like right before I start my period, I'm like, my skin looks just so dull. There's like no life to it. But having clearer skin and just having that glowy sensation to you, and just overall feeling more alive. You're going to have more aspirations, or just feeling like, just, you're going to feel like a bad bitch when you're in your follicular phase and you have optimal levels of estrogen. So estrogen also plays a huge role in pregnancy and the ability to get pregnant too, if that is your goal. So estrogen is a good thing. We do want estrogen. We just don't want it to be too high all of the time. And then what we can go into next is, we also don't want it to be too low. When it's too low, we can have you can actually not have a period if it's too low. I see a lot of women that I've worked with over the last couple of years that I've helped them get their periods back after years since getting off birth control, and their period just never showed up. A lot of times this is from lower levels of estrogen, and we don't want that either.
Yes, absolutely. I don't want anybody listening to take away from this podcast that estrogen is bad or that we should start doing all these things to lower our estrogen, because in the same respect, if we lower our estrogen too much, then we're going to have an increased risk for osteoporosis and lower energy and lower libido and overall slower metabolic rate, right? So even like increased appetite or cravings, because a lot of times when someone is struggling to get their period back or when someone is just struggling to have adequate levels of estrogen, a big root cause of that is often under eating or over exercising. And so when the body is in this state of stress, a woman's body doesn't even have enough energy or nutrients to cycle their levels of estrogen to the point of building up that uterine lining and having a period, let alone ovulating. A common response that that woman will feel is increased hunger, because that's just the body trying to keep itself safe. The body's trying to protect itself by saying, oh my gosh, we don't even have enough energy to do this vital process for a woman's overall health and well-being. Now we have to signal she needs to get more food in her system, because food is energy, right? So that's something that I see a lot as well. And even kind of coming back to the relationship between estrogen and bone health, low estrogen is associated with joint pain, fatigue, poor mood. Again, not only are we going to have really bad PMS symptoms if we have high estrogen, but we're also probably going to be more prone to depression, anxiety when we have low estrogen. And then all of that together, the joint pain, the low energy, the low mood, that's going to lead us into being more sedentary. We're not going to be going to the gym to strength train to protect our bone health. And it can really lead to a lot of issues over time.
Yeah. And speaking on sexual health as well, lower estrogen is going to decrease. Well, estrogen is what is responsible for when you do get closer to ovulation. Most women, and it's also just side note, if you don't necessarily see cervical mucus or discharge, that doesn't mean that you're not creating it. But a lot of women will notice that discharge in their underwear when they get closer to ovulation. And that is in part due to estrogen levels rising. So if you're someone that you never see it, just have that conversation with your doctor, and potentially that could be. And if you have a lot of the symptoms that we've listed with low estrogen, that's something to consider. But having less cervical mucus, you also can just develop more dryness. So vaginal dryness is a big sign of low estrogen as well. We see a lot of these symptoms in people that are postmenopausal, I've had several clients that have low estrogen levels as well, and they struggle with that. They feel like when I have sex with my partner, I constantly need to use a ton of lube because I'm always just so dry, and then it hurts or I bleed because of it, because I'm very dry. So that's another symptom of too low of estrogen. Now, estrogen is going to be lower when you get closer to your period. So pay attention to these symptoms. If you have a lot of these symptoms where you're in your follicular phase and you're supposed to be having higher levels of estrogen, that's where it's like, oh, I'm supposed to be feeling more wet. I'm supposed to be feeling more lubricated right now naturally, but I'm feeling really, really dry cycle after cycle. It's a recurring event. That's something to pay attention to as well. In terms of sexual health.
100%. And I think that's why I really love teaching women about their menstrual cycle, because I'll talk to someone about this and they might say, well, how do I know if I'm in my follicular phase? How do I know if I'm in my luteal phase? Oftentimes people don't even realize what phase of their cycle they're in, other than, oh, I'm having horrible bloating and PMS symptoms, so my period must be coming. But just learning about your basal body temperature and what that looks like during the different phases of your cycle, that's a really great tool that women can use to identify, no, I am definitely in my follicular phase right now. I know this because this is what my graph looks like, and this is what I should be experiencing. These are the symptoms that I should be looking out for. So that's always really empowering too.
Yeah, 100%. And it's obviously, if you're trying to get pregnant or if you're trying to prevent pregnancy, tracking ovulation is important for that. But in taking your temperature, it helps you to see where you're at so that you can have more self-love, honestly, because then you can, before I knew about this, I used to beat myself up so badly in my luteal phase because I didn't feel as great as I did. And I would push myself in the gym, be like, why don't I feel good? Like, I feel so lazy. What's wrong with me? And then I learned about all of this stuff and I'm like, oh, I actually need to be so nice to myself right now, nicer than in my follicular phase, and I'm not being. So it can help you to just understand your body and what's happening, why it's happening, what should be happening during those different phases, so that you're not constantly questioning what's wrong with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know you just touched on some symptoms of low estrogen, the vaginal dryness, low libido, pain during sex, but even symptoms like insomnia, like really struggling to fall or stay asleep at night. Brain fog is another big one, difficulty concentrating, although it's funny because I've even seen brain fog in women who have high estrogen. So that can be like one of those double-edged swords. And even just irregular periods in general. A lot of times we see women who have been diagnosed with PCOS, they often have irregular periods, and they're also going to have very irregular estrogen levels, oftentimes low estrogen levels. But as I'm sure you know, PCOS is one of those things that I think doctors overdiagnose, and they don't, a lot of times they don't actually do the right kinds of testing, and they don't ask the right questions to help a woman understand, well, what is the root cause of your PCOS in the first place? You know, I've had clients who just go get an ultrasound from their doctor because I've worked with a client for over a year. She really struggled with getting her period back after birth control. And ultimately it was because she wasn't eating enough and she was way too stressed, but she was super concerned. So she talked to her gynecologist and she went to go get an ultrasound, and she had like some pearls on her ovaries, which are just the immature follicles, and they immediately, without doing any additional testing, gave her a PCOS diagnosis. And she came to me and was like, what the heck? Is this why I don't have my period yet? And I'm like, no.
Yeah. The other thing with PCOS is it's PCOS is a syndrome. So when you have a syndrome, it's not a disease. A syndrome is a collection of symptoms. So that just means because you have this symptom, and this symptom, we're going to classify you as PCOS. It's the same thing with IBS. IBS is not a technical diagnosis. It's a syndrome of, if you have this symptom, okay, we can label you as IBS to give you some sort of thing to tell you, but we don't actually know why you have it or what to do about it besides, oh, take birth control again for PCOS. They don't actually dig into, whereas most diseases, it's like, okay, we can backtrack. This disease comes from this. You know what I mean?
Correct. 110%. Yes.
It's a very frustrating diagnosis, PCOS is, because there's a lot that you can look into in terms of root cause and just like insulin, diet. How much are you eating?
One thing that I wanted to bring up on that topic is this client that I was just referring to. She had come off of birth control, really struggling to get her period back, realized that she was under eating and over exercising. She had come to me because she wanted to lose weight. She wanted to get off of birth control to prepare for her fiance and her to get married, have baby. But she also wanted to lose weight before her wedding. And so I had to have a really honest conversation with her and say, okay, we got you off of birth control and now we're trying to get your period back, because if you are not having a regular period, you're probably not going to be able to lose weight. It's just not going to be healthy for you long term. We have to get you ovulating first and foremost. And ultimately, you have to make a choice. What is your top priority here? Do you want to really focus on eating more and fueling your body well and staying at maintenance for a little bit while we work to get your cycle back so that in the future you can actually sustainably lose body fat? Or do you just want to try and push yourself into this super unsustainable calorie deficit and completely forgo the fact that you're not even cycling? Right. And sometimes that can be a really hard realization for women to come to. You know, they think that weight loss is the end all be all, and it's not, you know, and we actually do have to eat more in order to get to our long-term goals anyway. So that's just something to think about too.
Yeah, that's a big, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a huge conversation that I think a lot of women struggle with. I've struggled with that myself too. And it's just, it's so, but then it comes the conversation and why I've done this 4-week series on the podcast of, are some of these hormonal things why you are struggling to lose weight in the first place? And hey, you probably need to work on these things before you're even going to be able to successfully lose weight. And you might be able to push yourself really, really, really hard and get the weight off. But because you didn't fix the foundation, you're going to gain it back so easily and even maybe even more. And then you're going to be back at square one. So sure, you could probably push yourself and get to that, maybe lose a few pounds, maybe not though. And then you're going to have to be come back to square one anyways.
Yeah, absolutely. And on the topic of pregnancy, I'm sure you have a lot of women listening to your podcast who want to get pregnant or maybe are pregnant and want to learn how to fuel their body through that. Or maybe they just had a baby and they want to learn how to heal their hormones, balance their hormones, get, you know, their body back after pregnancy, all of the things. So one thing I just want to throw in here, breastfeeding. Your hormones while you are breastfeeding are going to look very, very different than a woman who is not breastfeeding, even if both of those women just had a baby. So if you are having some of those symptoms like the fatigue, the difficulty concentrating, the low libido, the vaginal dryness, you know, all of these signs of low estrogen, and you are breastfeeding, that is very normal because breastfeeding is going to contribute to those lower estrogen levels, but that's to be expected during that phase that your body is in. So I just wanted to throw that in there too.
Yes, absolutely. Good note. And make sure that you are eating enough.
Yes, yes, yes. Food is fuel for your milk supply and your baby.
Absolutely. So let's kind of talk about how women can get their estrogen checked. Do you prefer blood or a Dutch? What's your preference?
Depends on the client. Honestly, because I love the Dutch test. I really do. I think it is such an incredible comprehensive picture of hormone health, right? Because with a Dutch, we're going to see cortisol. We're going to see not just free cortisol. We're going to see total metabolized cortisol. They are different things. We're going to see all three different types of estrogen, the metabolites. We're going to see androgens, progesterone, organic acid, which can help us screen for nutrient deficiencies and gut health issues. And it's such an amazing test. However, not every woman needs one, and it's not in every woman's budget. So that's okay. We can still test your sex hormones just with a little bit more understanding of, again, where you are at in your cycle. Even for a Dutch test, I wouldn't want a woman taking a Dutch test unless we were tracking basal body temperature and we knew that we were in our luteal phase, preferably 5 to 7 days after ovulation, right? And so even if a woman can't afford a Dutch test, that's totally okay. We can still get estradiol and estrone and estriol checked via blood. We can do a full sex panel. And that is often enough for us as qualified practitioners, as experienced practitioners in the field, to determine, again, what is the root cause of this woman's high or low estrogen. Just because we also know our clients, we know their lifestyle, we know their history, their health history, et cetera. Yep. So I will use both, just depends on the person, their budget, and their symptoms.
Yep, I'm the same. Absolutely. I also typically, if a client comes to me and they have a plethora of GI issues, and I think a lot of this is stemming from the GI, I will do just blood and then dive more into the gut versus spending the money on a Dutch.
Yes.
Because you're going to have to work on your gut first anyways.
100%. 100%. Just like we said, poor gut health is often a root cause for imbalanced estrogen levels. And you brought up a good point. You can learn so much about somebody's gut health with blood work alone if you know how to read and interpret the labs correctly. Yes. We don't have to jump to a 3-day stool test or GI BAP or anything. We don't have to. They're helpful tools, but they're not the end all be all.
Right, exactly. Something I do want to say is if you are somebody that you want to get your labs tested, first of all, you don't necessarily have to go the doctor route. Practitioners like Alex and myself can help you get these tests done. But if you are somebody that you're like, well, I have a gynecologist appointment coming up, I'm just going to ask my gynecologist, which absolutely do that. But here's some things that you should know about that testing and when to do it, because I have, and this is coming from a place of experience myself and with clients, in that place only. Sometimes you won't be informed of when you specifically need to get your blood tests done if mm-hmm. these are things that you want to check. So first and foremost, if you're going to check your estrogen, technically you don't need to check your estrogen in the luteal phase because it is present in your follicular phase. Therefore, if that's all you want to check, your doctor may not tell you to check it in your luteal phase. However, when we look at the body as a whole, we look at sex hormones as a whole, we want to see what your estrogen levels are in comparison to your progesterone, because there's two types of those estrogen dominance. Remember, you can either have just too much estrogen, or estrogen could be normal, but your progesterone is so low that you are then experiencing estrogen dominance because that yin-yang relationship is not there between the two hormones. So it's very important to learn how to track your ovulation. I'm not talking about just having your app tell you when you're ovulating. That's probably very inaccurate. You need to start tracking your basal body temperature so that you can pinpoint when that temperature goes up and stays up, and then you can see when you're ovulating, and then get your hormones checked 5 to 7 days after you confirm that ovulation. And that's where you should go to get your estrogen and progesterone checked during your menstrual cycle. Okay. And I'm sure that doctors also don't have the time to teach you how to track your menstrual cycle. So they're like, just go on to day 21, even though day 21 may not be the right day for you, because they don't have time to sit there and explain all of this stuff. Like, we've been talking to you for an hour now, helping you. They don't have an hour to sit with you to explain this. So we are here to tell you, this is when you should get those checked to see the best results.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. And don't be discouraged. If you reach out to either one of us and you are interested in getting a sex panel, can even just via blood, you have a doctor's appointment coming up and you want to get your blood work checked and hopefully they can pay through it. Yeah. Pay for it going through insurance. I fully support that. And I've had mm-hmm. clients do that. I will tell them, these are the assays that I want your doctor to run. The client comes in with a piece of paper. This is what I want tested. This is why, because we take the time to educate them. Mm-hmm. And then they go into their doctor's office thinking that they're going to get this blood work covered by insurance. And then the doctor says, you don't need that. We're not going to run that for you. And please try not to get too discouraged if that happens. That has happened to me. That has happened mm-hmm. to many of my clients. And it is very, very frustrating, but don't be alarmed if that's their answer.
Don't be alarmed if that happens. If that happens, just say, okay, never mind then.
We've got you.
I'm going to go to Alex and Leslie because they're going to help me. Never mind, yep. I don't need you.
Literally. Oh my goodness. All
right. Well, let's kind of wrap this up about, we talked about high estrogen, we talked about low estrogen. So let's break the two down of, okay, somebody, let's talk about low estrogen first. Somebody realizes after testing and comparing to a lot of their symptoms, they have really low estrogen. What can they do on their own to help with these, help get it up?
Yes. Number one is going to be making sure you are eating enough food. Making sure you're eating enough food. And this is something that you can do on your own, even if you're not working with a coach. You can start tracking your food and just bringing awareness to what you're eating, recognizing that most calorie recommendations in something like MyFitnessPal are probably going to undershoot you.
Oh, yeah. Way too low.
But really take an honest look at your eating habits and start increasing your portion sizes. Start adding in an extra snack here and there. If you are somebody who is doing a lot of high intensity activity, again, that is stressing the body out, especially if you are also under eating or you're someone that has tried to diet their entire life and has always kind of fallen into this trap of eat less, move more, mm-hmm. and you're not getting a cycle and you're having vaginal dryness and insomnia. Well, guess what? You probably have low estrogen because of that yo-yo dieting history, because of that, you know, poor relationship with food, which it's not your fault. I've been there. Leslie's been there. It's okay. But a really great actionable step that you can take is start reducing your training load, start increasing your portion sizes, a little bit of the foods that you're already eating, and really implement more of that parasympathetic support. Those parasympathetic supporting activities that we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, supporting your stress response, right? It is going to be important just so that your body feels safe to ovulate again, right? Deep breathing, breath work, even increasing your intake of certain phytonutrients like soy. I think it's a really bad rap, but for somebody with low estrogen, increasing soy protein can be really, really helpful. Increasing animal protein, if you're not eating a ton of it, just eating enough protein in general is going to help. But cholesterol really gets a bad rap because obviously too much cholesterol in our system can increase our risk of heart disease. But if we don't have enough cholesterol, cholesterol is the backbone for all of our hormones. So eating more protein, animal protein in particular, can help. Now, obviously, even if you are somebody who is vegan or vegetarian, I actually used to be vegan for a really long time. I work with a lot of vegan vegetarian women. You still can get your estrogen up even if you're not eating animal protein. It's not the only way, but it's just something to consider.
Yeah. I had very low cholesterol about like a year and a half ago when I did a blood panel. I was like, excuse me.
Yep.
I'm gonna die soon. Like, why is this so low? But that was a big issue for me too, is just cholesterol, really low cholesterol, which I've talked about several times on the podcast, where that's not something you're gonna hear from a doctor, is that you have too low. They actually, it's one of those things where on a blood panel, there's not a low range, which is crazy to me, because if your cholesterol is zero, what happens if our cholesterol is zero? How can it just be, oh, we just don't want it this high, but there's no low range? Because we know all of our hormones literally come from cholesterol. So we need cholesterol. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But yes, all of those things, getting healthy fats too, healthy fats, like your omega-3s, that's going to be really, really important. So making sure that you are eating enough fat, back to the cholesterol talk, making sure you're having enough fat in your diet. I don't think a lot of women go low fat as much as they would low carb to try to diet, but just pay attention, like, are you eating enough fat in your diet too? Because that's going to be really important as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you are somebody who's listening to this podcast thinking that you probably have high estrogen, or you really resonated with some of the symptoms that we had talked about in regards to high estrogen, and especially if you are somebody that has been chronically stressed for a really long period of time, something that you can do to help support your estrogen and your detoxification capacity to bring that estrogen down naturally, again, is going to be gut health, making sure you're pooping every day. How do we do that? Making sure you're drinking enough water, increasing your fiber intake, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, making sure we're having that color on our plate at every meal, walking after meals, or even doing like an abdominal massage to get things moving really, really can help. Not just in terms of your gut health, but again, we know that pooping more regularly and supporting your gut is also, again, going to bring down your high estrogen levels if you are struggling with that. Cruciferous vegetables, ground flax seeds, and even broccoli sprouts. Broccoli sprouts will increase the gene expression of an enzyme called COMT, which is going to be involved in your methylation. If you are not methylating properly, you're probably not going to be detoxing your excess estrogen. So broccoli sprouts can help with that. Cruciferous vegetables and ground flax seeds. Cruciferous vegetables especially have compounds called DIM and I3C, which some women can take supplements of, like really, really high doses of DIM in, you know, more extreme cases. I would not recommend going that route unless you are working with a practitioner, unless you have testing to confirm that something like that would help you. But even just by adding in more cruciferous vegetables to your diet can be a really, really great start. And I know we had talked about the importance of B vitamins, taking a B complex, having nutrients in your diet from eggs. So choline, eggs are really high in choline. Liver support, supporting your liver with reducing your alcohol intake, increasing your intake of glutathione, again, either via food or supplementation. All are things that you can start doing right now if you feel like you are struggling with high estrogen.
Absolutely. I love all of those things. All of them. I love them all. Well, thank you so much for being here. I think that wraps up today's topic. I feel like if we talk too much, it's not going to be retained. So let's end this podcast here. I know for me, when I listen to the educational podcast, there's like a cutoff where I'm like, okay, I can't keep listening to this because I don't remember what we talked about 10 minutes ago.
This was a lot of information, but I think it was good.
It was great. So you guys may need to listen to this twice. to really remember it all or take what pertains to you and put that into your life. So this was great. Thank you so much for being here, Alex. Where, if people want to follow you, what do you have going on? Where can they follow you? Tell them all your things.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was such a fun conversation. I really love this topic. And I am on Instagram at alex.undefined. You can put my little handle in the show notes.
Yeah, I will.
And I do have my own coaching company. I actually just recently launched. So my company is called Beyond the Label. So very exciting. I am taking on one-on-one clients. I specialize in holistic health and wellness. All of the conversations that Leslie and I are having today, I like to have with my clients. I really love to help women overcome their relationship with food and ultimately realize that they are more than a label. They are more than their body. I always say that nutrition and fitness and all of the stuff that we're talking about is really just the tip of the iceberg. It's not everything. And I like to teach women how to be more than that, which is why I named my company Beyond the Label. So definitely check me out over there and let us know what questions you have. Like I said, I know this is a lot of information and it can be a little bit of a complicated topic. So please, my DMs are open. If you listen to this podcast, you just want to reach out and chat, say hi, ask questions. Would love to get to know you. And I know Leslie's DMs are open as well.
Yeah, absolutely. If there's ever something that you have a question on in any podcast episode that we do, feel free to message me. I'm happy to talk further through it with you in DMs. I love educating women. So, and I love just having conversations and like making new connections. So absolutely DM me there. As far as the podcast goes, next week we will be starting season 3, and season 3 is going to be on all things fertility, prepping your body for fertility. So we're going to start the conversation. I don't remember off the top of my head what next week's episode is going to be on, but we're going to start the conversation about fertility and getting your body ready. So the next season, there will be some topics that do pertain to pregnancy and postpartum specifically, but it's mostly going to be geared towards getting your body ready to conceive, to get pregnant. If you want to have kids in the next, like you're already trying or within the next 3 years, these are some of the things we're going to talk about, what labs to get to look into, like, are you in a good place to start trying? We're going to talk about different fitness and pelvic floor health modalities. We're going to talk about nutrition for prenatal and fertility. We're going to talk about all of the things. So that's what we will start talking about next week. I love you guys. Thanks for being here, and I'll see you next week.